check to make sure that everything is working, looks like it is. I guess then that we can get started. This is Jim Bowling of the Center for History of Chemistry speaking with Raymond H. Bowney at his residence.
It's Ray Bowney, incidentally.
Ray, it's not Raymond.
It never got to be Raymond.
I see, okay. I have seen it both ways.
Yes, so. The official record in the Dow Chemical Company somehow or other got to be Raymond, but it has been Ray. In fact, I was the third boy, and my mother expected a girl, so she was going to call it R-A-E. And so when I turned out to be a boy, it was R-A-Y, and that was it.
I see. Okay. You've already answered my first question to a certain point. We're at Higgins Lake, get the place right, Higgins Lake, Michigan. This is the 21st of August, 1986. Dr. Bowney, you were born on January 10th, 1903 in Brave, Pennsylvania. Can you tell me something about your parents, their names, occupation?
My father was English and second-generation American, and so there it wasn't, therefore it wasn't very unusual that he was called George Washington Bowney. My mother was Annette Cather.
And what did your father do?
My father was an oil well worker, and he worked in the oil fields all through Pennsylvania and West Virginia for several years, I think maybe 15 years. And then his father left him a farm in Western Pennsylvania. And so the whole family moved to Western Pennsylvania, and Dad tried to make a farm go. But he wasn't a farmer, and the farm was too small, and he finally failed completely in that, went back to the oil fields. Then he got to be a driller contractor, and finally he started drilling wells on his own, for gas primarily, but selling it then to the big companies. But then he was injured in an automobile accident, taking me to school back in 1925 probably. And he never did recover. He broke his back. He never did recover, but he did have his interest in these oil wells and gas wells, so he managed quite well.
At the time you were growing up, then, was he already past the farming stage?
Let's see. About the middle of World War II, he moved back. He went back. We still stayed on the farm, and we went to school on the farm. But he moved back into West Virginia and started moving. And the farm failed, and he started moving back into the oil business, oil and gas business. First as a driller, and then as a contractor, and finally as an organizer of wells, where he would drill. He would sell maybe half interest in the well. He would own half of it for the drilling and the contracting and so on.
I see.
And that's where he really established a little money.
Now, Brave, Pennsylvania is a little town on the border.
It's the crossroad on the border of Pennsylvania and West Virginia. And we lived there for about 2 years. I don't remember any of this. But the first thing I remember, the very first thing, we had moved to Blacksville, West Virginia, which is only about maybe 10 miles from Brave. And Father had gone fishing, spearing, and had brought back quite a few fish. And I was wide-eyed, two-year-old kid watching him. And he finally cleaned the fish, and there was a big fish, a little fish inside the big fish. So I had my first lesson in ecology way back then, how the big fish eat the little fish and the little big fish and so on and so on.
Then where did you have your early schooling? Was it in?
This was all in Western Pennsylvania. We lived in Plain Township, near about 3.5 miles from Grove City. I went to a little one-room school. And finally, at the seventh grade, I took the exam. You had to, in order to get into high school, you had to, from a one-room school, you had to go in and take the examination. So I skipped the eighth grade and went to high school, also in Grove City, Pennsylvania. And we walked, my brothers and I walked the 3.5 miles in and back. And then we finally had bicycles, and we rode our bicycles back and forth.
Now, was the farm up there in Grove City, is that... You and your father had the farm, was that up
yes.
in Grove City?
Yes, that was three and a half... That was in Pine Township, okay. 3.5 miles from... And right near this one-room school. About a mile from the one-room school. It was called Cranberry School. Mm. In Pine Township.
Do you remember the name of the teacher that... You had, I guess you had the same person for all those grades then, or...
Yeah, we had probably half a dozen teachers, each one year or 2 years or something like that. The one that, Vella McCain was the one that I remember and that probably had more influence on me than any of the other teachers. The other teachers I just don't quite remember, except I enjoyed the one-room school, and if you're just a little bit brighter than the normal youngster going to school, to be able to sit and hear the eighth graders recite and the seventh graders and the sixth graders, and that was a real benefit to me. I enjoyed it, and it was a great way to go to school.
You learned a great deal, more than just if you had been, your class had been seventh.
Very much more.
Now, in what way, you said that Vella McCain had an influence on you, in what way do you remember her that...
Well, here is a good way to tell you how much I made a mistake one day when she asked me a question and I answered mother, and that's what she was to me. She was really a second mother.
Okay.
And she was there the longest too. She was there for 2 or 3 years.
I'm sure you didn't have any exposure to science at that time, did you?
No, except. On the desk, up front near the teacher's desk, there was an encyclopedia. And if you had free time, you were welcome to go up and take out a book and sit at your desk and read it. So I did quite a bit of that. Mm-hmm. She had a set of books on that and a set of books on the Civil War. And both of them I read from one side to the other, one end to the other.
When you got into high school, you skipped eighth grade, went to high school, that would have been
1917, maybe. 17. That'd be close, anyway.
Okay, the war was just about over. The First World War
was just about over. My oldest brother enlisted in 1918, I think, because he was just in for a short time, and then the war was over.
I see. What did you do in high school? Did you get any science exposure in high school?
I had chemistry and I don't think I had physics even. And of course I had math and algebra, but I took a commercial course in high school. I had typing and shorthand and all that, bookkeeping, all that sort of a thing.
Was there a reason for that? That you had selected the commercial course?
Only that I thought I might use it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any idea of at that time of being a chemist or anything like that. However, about that time, my brother and I both got interested in amateur radio.
Okay.
And we had a Ford spark coil and a Galena detector set, receiver set, and I've often thought many times over how many amateur radio specialists there were, or just hobbyists there were at that time, and every one of us had a Galena or a silicon detector, and we were looking right at the transistor, right in the eye, and none of us fell for it.
My talking to Bill Goggin yesterday, he also...
Yep, he was.
...involved in amateur radio very early, about the same time.
And my brother continued. He stayed in it, and he worked for the Story Broadcasting Company.
Oh, I see. Yep.
For many, many years. But I didn't. I did continue the hobby, though, until I... In Grove City College, and at the time I finished high school, and the first couple of years in college, I had taken a correspondence course from the National Radio Institute and had got my first-class commercial operator's license and had a job on a boat, and that's what I was going to do when I finished Grove City College.
I see.
So my chemistry professor changed my mind. Also, a scholarship to Case changed my mind.
That's very interesting. And I want, before we get to Grove City, were there any high school teachers that influenced you in any way?
Not particularly. Not particularly. I can remember some I dislike, but I don't I don't remember any of them that influenced me. Maybe my chemistry professor did. I guess I should say that, because I did like chemistry, and it was easy for me, and he did recommend me to Pitt and a couple of other schools as well as Grove City. But money was a big factor at that time, and Grove City was close enough that I had no choice. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it. And beside that, they had the first commercial broadcasting company, WSAJ. Mm. And they made the first broadcast, and my brother and I both worked in the physics department with the broadcasting station, which was WSAJ, and also the amateur radio station, which was 8YV. But we both worked, and we spent quite a bit of time, nights and weekends, running their stations.
When did you decide to go to college? You took the commercial course, so you probably didn't have that in mind when you started at Grove City High School.
No, I didn't. But I don't recall exactly why I decided to go to college. It just seemed to be the thing to do. Oh, my mother influenced me greatly. She was a very intelligent woman, and she had taken in high school algebra and a couple of science courses, and so she encouraged all of us boys to really get down and busy and do things. So she's the one who encouraged us to go to college. Dad didn't object, but he didn't do the encouraging like she did.
You said earlier you were the third boy. Did your other brothers go to Grove City ahead of you?
One, the oldest one, enlisted, so he never went to college. The other, there were five of us, beside Delma, who was the oldest one. Then there were five other brothers, and we all went to Grove City College. And a kid sister, who was 4 years younger than any of us, also went to Grove City College.
You remember what the costs were at that time?
About $200. I don't remember exactly, but something in that order.
And did you have a scholarship?
Not to Grove City.
Not to Grove City. So that you had.
But we lived at home, mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we had moved from a farm into Grove City itself. So when we went to college, we all of us boys were going from into Grove City, and we only had about a mile to ride our bicycles or walk to college.
Now, you said you worked at the radio station. Did you have any other jobs to help support your expenses?
Yes, I had a job continually, all through summer jobs, all through most of the last couple of years of high school. First as a roustabout and as a tool dresser in the oil and gas fields with my dad. He got me the job. But nevertheless, that was the first thing I did. Then the Bessemer Gas Engine Company in Grove City. And I worked there evenings some, and also one summer. And then I worked for a construction company, we called them the Brain Destruction Company. It was a brain construction company. But he built houses and little factories and things like that. But so I worked every summer somehow, some way or other, and earned some money. And that was my scholarship, was all I needed to go to college, even to go to Case.
Mm-hmm. What courses did you first take when you started at Grove City? Did you start in as a chemistry major?
First 2 years, I just took what would have been their academic college course. Mm-hmm. I did have both chemistry and physics in the first 2 years, and math. But it was about the third year, when I was a junior, and then I began to like chemistry better than radio, and I began to think about that.
And can you tell me something about the chemistry department when you were there?
Seaplane, O.J., I think that may not be the correct initials, but it was Seaplane, and he was a Case graduate, and he was head of the chemistry department, and a man by the name of C.J. Hoyt, who was a very, very wonderful teacher. And he taught physical chemistry when I was there. Later, he was head of the chemistry department. But these two people were both had a great deal to do with my lacking chemistry and taking it up later on.
The first individual you mentioned, what did he teach?
He taught organic chemistry and general chemistry, and I think either qualitative or quantitative analysis. Mm-hmm. And he also taught food chemistry. We had a course in food chemistry.
That's unusual.
Yes, for a college that size, it was unusual.
Were they the only two in the faculty at the time in the department?
The only two.
What were the laboratory facilities like?
They were downstairs in what was called the main administration building. Today they would be considered a very unsafe, I'm sure, and a very primitive laboratory. But they had all the facilities, and we had our quantitative and qualitative analysis and organic chemistry laboratory and general chemistry laboratory and all those things. But they were all in the basement of a general administration building at that time.
Were there many other chemistry majors?
I can think of three, and some of them, I can think of four. And some of them were either 1 year ahead of me or 1 year behind me, too. I can't remember clearly.
Do you remember how many students there were at Grove City at that time?
About 600.
About 600.
Pretty close to that.
Now that would have been 1920
to 24.
24, okay. I wasn't clear on the dates.
Yeah,
I guess that was the reason that...
24, I finished Grove City and was offered a scholarship, which really determined the fact that I was going to take chemistry rather than radio.
You had indicated that you were going to be a radio operator on a ship. That was one thing you were looking at. And then by your junior year, you really liked chemistry. Were there other schools that you were looking at, or was it just that Case had given you a scholarship?
Just that Case had given me a scholarship, and that Seaplane, our head of the chemistry department at Grove City, was a Case graduate. Mm-hmm. And he influenced me to go there, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he had something to do with getting me the scholarship also. But no, I did not consider any other school very much. Any other college.
Because mm-hmm. Pittsburgh wasn't far away, so...
No. Pittsburgh wasn't far away. My brother went to... who took radio and was interested in radio. He did take electrical engineering at Carnegie.
I see.
Carnegie Tech at that time.
Mm-hmm. You entered Case then in...
1924.
Okay. Now, did you get another bachelor's degree from Case? Again, I wasn't clear in looking at the...
Yeah, in chemistry at Grove City, and chemical engineering at Case.
I see.
And then I wrote a thesis. I had, between the two schools, I had enough academic work that I could, it covered my master's degree. So I wrote a thesis on automatic control in the chemical industry. That was the thesis I wrote to get my master's degree in 1930, I think, from Case.
And that you were already a Dow when that happened.
Yes.
Okay, that we'll have to talk about that. Let's go back to your early days at Case. You remember any faculty? Of course, Veazey, I'm sure, is a person that
yes,
you interacted with.
And Smith, Dr. Smith was still, he was emeritus, I believe. He was teaching at that time. Dr. Smith, and then Dr. Veazey, Dr. Pratton.
Oh, yes. both of whom came to Dow eventually.
Yes, and they were very much tied up with Dow and interested in Dow, too, mm-hmm. even when they were teaching. And Dr. Smith was. And the Smith boys, Dr. Smith's sons, I think there were three of them, or two or three of them, organized and started the this oil substitute company in Cleveland. Can't think of the name of it right now.
What courses did you take then, and why did you move into chemical engineering? You said you got a degree in chemical engineering at Case.
I think primarily it was my teachers. At Case, of course, chemical engineering was not the kind of a course you have today. In the chemistry department, you took all your chemistry courses. But then they didn't teach engineering. You went to the electrical engineering department and took courses for the electrical end of it. You went to the metallurgical department for that, and so on. So you got a nice introduction to courses in different areas. And the chemistry department really just, well, they taught industrial chemistry, which I guess would be called chemical engineering, but primarily it was chemistry.
And what were their facilities like the time you were there?
They had quite good facilities, quite good. For that time and period, we had a chemical building, we call it the chemical building, and they had laboratories on several floors. Kind of mixed in with the recitation buildings, so we had very good facilities, I would say, for that time.
The scholarship that you had, did you have to do anything for it? Did you have to do any student?
No,
teaching?
I didn't have to do anything for it. It was a Griselli chemical company that they were in Cleveland then, and later it was a DuPont. Later DuPont, but it was a Griselli fellowship.
I see. And
I remember it was $600.
That covered your...
That covered my tuition and part of my living expenses.
Where did you stay when you were in Cleveland? Did you have a...
I didn't belong to a church fraternity, so I didn't have a fraternity house. I did belong to the chemical fraternity, Alpha Chi Sigma. Mm-hmm. But, so I stayed in private boarding houses. Usually with two or three others. Mm-hmm. There were well-known places for the students to stay, and all within walking distance of the college.
Were there other Grove City students at Case when you were there?
No. Another Grove City student followed me, and he also had the same fellowship as I did. And if I remember right, ahead of me was a Grove City, Dr. Kendall was his name. And he was several years ahead of me, though, probably 5 or 6 years ahead of me. But he also was from Grove City, and he also had a scholarship at Case. So Dr. Seepline took care of it, the students that he thought would make good chemists or chemical engineers.
That's very important. It certainly helps.
Yes.
Now, you said that you had enough academic work. Between what you had at Grove City, and I wasn't clear on your early work at Case that you could get both a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. Now, the master's degree didn't come until 1930, and you were already at Dow.
Oh, look, I should have maybe told about this before we're talking about Grove City, but my doctor's degree is an honorary degree, and it's from Grove City College.
Now, what I'm after, though, is your thesis. You wrote a thesis for your master's degree, but you were already at Dow Chemical. You came to Dow in 26. Your master's degree was in 1930, and I wasn't clear how you got a degree when you were at Dow. I mean, already out here at Dow.
Oh, that was a conventional thing to do at Case, especially if you'd gone 4 years to another school and had amassed enough academic work to be worth a master's degree. Then you could work for a few years and you could write a thesis on the work you were doing at your. And this was automatic control, and that's what I was doing in the physics lab at that time. So this was a rather a conventional thing to do at that time.
Okay. So you were actually using your industrial work as a research topic for your thesis.
Yep.
I see.
And the academic work you had amassed just because you'd gone 6 years to school.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or to college, I should say.
That clears up a lot of things, and that's very interesting. I hadn't realized it. Did you have anyone at Dow who was acting as a coordinator with this thesis writing back at Case?
Yes. I guess my first real contact with Case, John Grebe, who ran the lab, was a physicist. And our chemistry professor, Dr. Veazey, when in my junior year at Case, this would have been my first year at Case, explained the thesis of this young physicist in the physics department, and he had evolved a method of detecting certain chemical elements by the time it took and the voltage required to liberate them from solution. And he plotted this on a chart and got that, and he used this as a method of chemical analysis. And Dr. Veazey told us about this and explained it to us and said that this might be a method for automatic control of some chemical processes. Mm. So that's how I first heard about Grebe. Then about my senior year, Dr. Veazey had a note from H.H. Dow asking for two, what he called, athletic students to lift and drop sandbags during a lecture he was going to give on the use of organic, high-boiling organic chemicals to improve the generation of power. So he asked for these two students, and Dr. Veazey picked Norman Barstow because he was from Midland, and picked me because I was a friend and we were doing a thesis together. Neither one of us were particularly athletic. So we found we could not generate a 1 horsepower for 3 minutes. We just couldn't do it by lifting sandbags. It wasn't possible. Two athletic football players might have been able to do it, but we could not. So we convinced Herbert Dow that half a horsepower would be satisfactory. So we lifted and dropped sandbags during that period. And as I wrote in my introduction to the chapter, we inadvertently demonstrated, I think it was Newton's third law of motion. Anyhow, about the time we finished our demonstration, our ordeal, I should say, the bellhop rushed into the room. This was in the Hollandon Hotel in Cleveland, Ohio. He rushed into the room and said, "You're knocking the plaster off the room below." So for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction. But anyhow, that's how I got acquainted with Herbert Dow, or got to know him a little bit, and I heard his lecture and listened to him, and he listened to me and saw me, and between Ormond and Dr. Veazey, I was offered a job at Case, or at Dow Chemical in Cleveland. Incidentally, it was interesting to me, maybe interesting to others too, of the four job offers that I had when I finished Case at Cleveland, three were because of my hobby in radio, and these three were Westinghouse, RCA, and General Electric. Mm. As a chemist, but working in because I was interested in radio. And the only honest-to-God offer I had in the chemistry industry was the Dow Chemical Company. Mm. So naturally, I took the job.
Had you been out searching for jobs as you were finishing up a Case? Were you out actively looking for jobs? Or,
no.
Or was it were the faculty pointing you towards...
I was offered a job, these four jobs, and they just kind of came. The faculty must have had something to do with it, because they did come to me, and I turned down the first three because it was not exactly what I wanted. I wanted to get in the chemical industry. Mm-hmm. And that was the only chemical plant that offered me a job.
That was 19...
That was 1926.
Yes. So you came to Midland in what?
1926, in July.
July, right after you graduated.
Yep.
What was your first assignment? I think you were in the...
I was in the main analytical laboratory to start. That was characteristic of the Dow Chemical Company, too. Everybody went to the main analytical laboratory to start.